Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, a very warm welcome to consultant orthopaedic surgeon Padder McSivna, who has joined us in studio for this week's Medical Matters. Padder, welcome. Lovely to meet you.
Thanks, Bailey. Very same.
Now, you were just telling me off air, you're a Cork man. You're from Ballymacera.
Correct, yeah.
And have you actually moved to Tralee, or are you commuting up and down?
No, I'm living here in Tralee. I've been very lucky to find a spot. I'm just over in Carrisleigh, actually, so it's a brief walk to the Bons, which is a nice walk even on a cold morning.
And how long are you in the Bons?
My first clinic actually started 14th of January.
Okay, so relatively new.
Relatively recent, yeah, but we've hit the ground running. And honestly, I can't thank the people of Kerry and even South Limerick as well. Even we've crossed over into a fairly big catchment area. The GPs have been great. The Bons actually organise a kind of a tour around for new consultants to visit and get some face time with the GPs. They have been so welcoming. They've taken time out of their own slots to let us in and have a chat with us, myself and some of our other consultants. And they've just kept us going, really. So plenty of referrals, and we've been very, very fortunate. And I'm trying to, I suppose, just establish myself really in this locality in the Southwest.
Yeah. And when you went into medicine, why was the orthopaedics the thing that attracted you?
I suppose it kind of happened over the period that I fell in love with a number of elements of medicine. Anesthetics was very good. Emergency medicine was fantastic. And then I ended up doing my first orthopaedic placement with the department in UCHG in Galway. And I just fell in love with it. And the orthopaedic side of things with bones, with x-rays being a very... It's broken now, we're going to replace it and we move on. It's very instantaneous. I'm a bit impatient as a personality that way. And of course, in the background then, my father's a carpenter as well. So I would have been, well, there are some family videos of me getting a bit frustrated with tools around the place that once lads get to know me, they'll see those. And it's, I suppose, a topic of mockery at home when I have a bit of a temper on me that the videos are discussed and the sulking of Pather's sulking. But so I've been very lucky. I've met some great mentors along the way. And I think it's with any line of work, if you're surrounded by people who are passionate about their own work, you can't help but fall in love with that element. And I met some great people along the way in other specialties as well, and they were very good to me as well. But I just fell into orthopaedics. The sport world was very good for me, and it was actually during COVID that really came about.
Yeah. In what way? Was it the people were getting more active and stuff?
Well, I'll tell you, actually, it was I was in North Wales, so I did some of my training in Ireland and some of my training on the Welsh rotation. I was living in North Wales at the time and COVID struck, so everything was shut down. No elective joints, barely any trauma being done. And I decided to do my second master's in sports and exercise medicine at that point. So I got to know some people through the University of South Wales, and they said, look, if you want to do some pitch side work, these are the courses you need to do. These are the elements of orthopaedics that would cross over. And then it just took off from there. And when I moved to South Wales, then I ended up working for a few different teams in rugby league, rugby union, ice hockey with the Cardiff Devils. And then ultimately my main home in sport was split between Aberavon Wizards and Bristol Bears, really, for the men and the women.
Okay, they're two rugby teams.
Two rugby union teams, yeah. And Bristol Bears really supported me quite a lot for my 3 years that I was working with them before we moved to Sydney for 2 years. And so we've had a bit of a coloured journey around the way to get from Ballyvourna to Tralee. So it's been a bit of a
long
trip.
Via Wales and Sydney
and everywhere else in between, yeah.
So talk to me about the work of an orthopaedic surgeon. What's your bread and butter stuff that you're doing day in, day out?
Bread and butter would be, I suppose it's twofold. There's trauma and orthopaedics. Now, trauma is what you would imagine, broken bones in general, hip fractures, ankle fractures and the likes of that, but also tendon injuries, tendon tears, that would be very common. And then the orthopaedic side of it would be what people might expect as joint replacements, so shoulders, hips and knees. But also the crossover with sports medicine into sports orthopaedic is something that I'm trying to establish as well, that you will have people who are sports physicians. They are not necessarily surgeons themselves. And then you will have surgeons who wouldn't necessarily cross over into the sports world. And I'm trying to bring both of them together here in this locality because, I mean, it's a sports mad part of the country. Anyway, COD is God, as you'd say. And with that, it's just trying to keep that local, bring that expertise to this area as well. And not only for athletes, but people who are trying to perform. So if you see somebody who's a carpenter or a plumber, tradesperson, you see somebody who is a weekend warrior, as we would say, they work a 9 to 5, but then they do 100 kilometres of cycling at the weekend. they need the same care as what you would have in an elite athlete or a professional athlete. And I suppose in trying to provide that crossover, keep you off the operating table as long as I possibly can, but at least then we're not having to refer you out to another specialty afterwards, that it can all be done in-house in the Bonds in Tralee. And that's what we're aiming for.
And do you do hip replacements and knee replacements and all that kind of thing?
Yes, I do. So from a replacement perspective, my practice would be shoulder, hip and knee. And from a sports perspective, it's more or less every joint except the hand and the spine. So if it's shoulders, elbows, hips, knees and ankles, any of those tendon problems or joint problems related to sport, I'm very happy to see them.
I'm just thinking out loud here about sports people and injuries, and you know, there's kind of an urban myth in Kerry, and I don't know, maybe there's a degree of truth in it, that we'll say the great successful Kerry football team of the 70s and 80s, that they a lot of them ended up, you know, years later crocked from you know, because of what they put their bodies through back in the day. Are we better now in terms of our athletes, in terms of what we now know about the body, making sure that they're better looked after in terms of their preparation, their fitness, going to the gym, looking after their joints, all that type of thing?
I think there's definitely an evolution of knowledge, and certainly no disrespect to the lads who would have been looking after those players in the 70s. They were doing what was best, I suppose you say, best practice at the time.
Yeah,
exactly. And we have to take that context. I think it's rest and appropriate rest and appropriate management of load would be the language that we would use. So we talk about return to play, or RTP would be mentioned in a lot of stuff. I actually prefer to use return to perform, because then that crosses over from the elite athlete into everybody else day to day who wants to be performing to their level. But I think rest is a very important part. It doesn't mean you have to avoid the exercise. It doesn't mean you have to avoid activity, but you're not loading it 100% 100% of the time. That you're taking that downtime, the down season, or the off season rather, and making sure you're rehabilitating appropriately. And we see a lot of that with concussion now as well, and a crossover into that with the appropriate downtime of minimum time for age appropriate stuff. But I think we are better now at offloading players, offloading people for the appropriate amount of time, letting them recover fully before we put them back into their position of play.
Yeah, and you hear so much now about ice baths and all these, and warm weather training and all these things that were kind of probably never around back in the day, that for athletes. Do you see a lot of footballers and hurlers and soccer players and that?
It's trickling in, certainly. So online as well, and I'm involved with a few different, I suppose, channels online as well from my previous time, where I would have worked as the team doctor. Now that I'm establishing that surgical practice, they're still in contact with me a little bit. And then I am seeing some of what I would, like I said, wind warriors. There's a few who've come into me and they work as firemen, they work as plasterers and plumbers, but they're still going off to Tuscany and Madeira to do 130k cycles per day. So I don't necessarily think that it's only for athletes, and I don't want people to think that if you're not an athlete, you can't come and see me. I want to see you if you are wanting to perform, if you want to get back to whatever hindrance is stopping you doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
I think the common thing is that everybody coming through the room has a complaint that's stopping them from doing whatever their goal is, and we just need to get them back to that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hope out there as well that people can be more active and enjoy sport and enjoy the great outdoors, hiking, whatever, cycling, into old age. You know, like, the day is gone when you turned 60 and you sat in the armchair. You know, now people are so active at such a later stages of life now. And that's all very good, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I've had a few patients in who are in their, let's say, early 60s, just hit retirement. And the conversation is always, what are you doing with your spare time now? And they'll say, I want to get 18 holes of golf in 3 days a week. Or somebody else might say, I want to go out and do 10K of walk and banna every day. And that's what they want to do. So I say to people, I don't treat you based on your date of birth. I never do. You're never too young for a joint replacement within reason, and you're never too old for a non-joint replacement. So I will never prescribe something before I meet you. I'll meet you, listen to what you want, what you're expecting to get, I suppose, back out of your activity levels. And if it is you want to be able to cycle 100 kilometres every week, like one of my patients coming up, that's what I'm trying to get him back to. And it doesn't really matter what your age is. I just want to hear what your activity levels are, what your expectations are, and we have a discussion around that then.
Yeah. Another thing we're hearing an awful lot, and I know we're going into bone health here now, is that in recent years we're hearing that we should all really be lifting weights. Obviously, you go along with that.
Absolutely. And I think rather than it just being me and being me, my voice saying it, there is some research backing this up as well. So the two studies would be LIFTMOR, LIFTMOR, and then the follow-up one from that was LIFTMOR-M. So the first one was perimenopausal and postmenopausal women who would be more likely to have osteoporosis and osteopenia. And I suppose the worry and the narrative was, oh, if you lift weights, you'll create more fractures. And that study has actually proven that it doesn't. They actually increase bone density by nearly 5% over just 8 months, which is nearly better than most medications. They followed up with that then with men. So certainly heavy lifting, and by heavy, I mean they're looking at 80 to 85% of your single rep max. So these are big weights being done for deadlifts, for shoulder presses, and for jumping movements as well. So it's not small weights, but it's also that bone likes to be surprised. Bone is a wonderful tissue because it's very, I suppose, reactive. The more you load it, the stronger it gets. The trade-off is that right beside it is cartilage, and that doesn't like load. So it's a balance between the two. So I would rather people do shorter courses of high intensity training and then the appropriate rest in between those two sessions then.
In between, yeah. I notice rest is very important from what you've been saying. And I suppose we're all guilty of it. We, you know, the 1st of January or the first day of Lent or something.
Absolutely.
Mad fitness kick and you know, the next thing we're tearing a hamstring or whatever, you know. So little, like, do a burst, but take a day off and then go back to it again or whatever.
Absolutely. So they say about 30 minutes of high intensity training twice a week. That was all that they'd studied in those particular two studies, and that was what found the change. I'm seeing a lot of patients who have huge mileage under them, and we're talking like 10, 15 kilometres of walking per day, but they're coming into me with stress fractures. So bone will adapt. We are very efficient at walking, so it doesn't burn as much calories as we'd like. It takes up a huge chunk of your day to go out for a 1K or a 2K walk, and people spend an hour, hour and a half doing this, but they're not seeing the change in their weight that they're looking for, and they're also very efficient, so they're not seeing the change in their fitness levels as much as they'd like. So certainly from the crossover into PTs, the strength and conditioning community, we would love to see people lifting more and maybe reducing the mileage a little bit. Because then I won't end up seeing people with as many stress fractures, which are, they're troublesome, they're difficult to manage because you don't need surgery, but we actually just need more rest again, and we have to offload that bone. But people still need to get back to work. They still need to get on with their lives, and they'll say, well, look, Pather, I can't rest my foot. I need to go to work. But it's the loading of that and getting such massive mileage under them is often the actual cause of the problem and not the solution.
Okay, very good. Well, listen, I can tell you the questions are flying in for you already, which doesn't surprise me. We will take a quick break and we'll be back with questions for Pather Muxivna, who's going to stay with us for another while. 083 300 3300.
Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee. Celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, if you've only just joined us, we are chatting to consultant orthopaedic surgeon at the Bonds here in Tralee, Pather Muxivna. Pather's talking to us about bone health, about sports injuries and everything in that general realm. We've lots of questions for you, Pather, but first of all, I just want to ask you a little bit about what we're eating and in terms of supplements we should be taking, or if any, vitamins we should be taking, if any, to strengthen our bones and our joints and all of that. I presume a good healthy diet should cover most of that.
I definitely think, yeah, the variety of stuff is important, and it's certainly a hot topic and definitely a hot potato, excuse the pun. With the vitamin D and calcium are certainly the staple of a lot of what we're doing. You'll hear a lot of information around collagen, glucosamine, magnesium. Unfortunately, we don't have categorical research that would be, let's say, that would stand up to robust critique. But certainly apart from the vitamin D and the calcium to start with. The other side of it then as well is magnesium does have some benefit with recovery, sleep habits and whatnot. But the one that I would certainly back and cover, or let's say that would be definitely recommended, would be vitamin D and calcium. The rest of them then, it depends on your indication for them. And finding some research that would cover that is quite difficult.
Yeah, so with the vitamin D, you need a little bit of sun, but not too much sun.
Exactly, that's it, yeah. So like you'll see a lot of fortified foods because you can take as much calcium as you possibly can, but without the vitamin D, your body can't process it. So the vitamin D supplementation is equally as important as the calcium.
Okay, very good. Now, question for you. A listener wants to know what is the best way to heal a meniscus tear? So you'll have to tell us, first of all, what is a meniscus tear?
The meniscus is a piece of tissue that is in your knee. There are two of them, one on the outside and one on the inside, as in the inseam and the outseam, and they act more or less as shock absorbers, but also give you some stability in the knee. Patients will often complain of what we call mechanical symptoms, or a clicking or a locking. Healing a meniscus is very tricky. It depends where the tear is. If it's near the blood supply, you can have some hope of healing it. If it's further in, where it's away from the blood supply, we will generally try to offload the knee, strengthen the knee, but also then if you do have keyhole surgery, we will trim away the part that's unstable. So healing the meniscus can be difficult, and it depends on where that tear is. And then obviously that would depend on the conversation with the patient, what their symptoms are and what their MRI scan would show.
This next question has me intrigued, Patter. This person says, will you please ask him, does he do hip replacements, placements the bikini way? I'm nearly afraid to ask what that is.
All right. So the bikini incision is, it refers to the direct anterior approach. So you go straight through the front of the hip as opposed to around the back. So currently I do what is called a spare approach, S-P-A-I-R-E. And what that is, it preserves most of the tendons at the back of the hip joint and takes down one of them, and then we repair it. The bikini line firstly refers to the skin incision. So we do it in the crease around where your thigh would meet your tummy, but also then the approach down into the hip itself is called a direct anterior. I don't do this currently. The view will be once the practice is established and if there's enough appetite for it that we would start offering it. But there's a bit, firstly, there's a learning curve with it, and also separately, there's also equipment purchasing and a few other elements to it. And with my practice being sports orthopedic primarily, I feel that the posterior spare approach serves as good a purpose for hip replacements currently. And of the ones that I've done so far, the patients have been very happy. Stable hips, x-rays are good, and we're very happy with the outcome so far.
Okay, very good. And now we have a lady in her 60s. She's fairly healthy, she says, and not overweight, but she's getting a lot of pains in her knees and ankles, and anti-inflammatories are not helping. She said, I did spend a lot of my working life on my feet. So she's wondering, where should she start?
Starting wise, I think it would be, let's say if I was meeting her in the clinic directly, I'd ask her where the primary pain is. Is it knees? Is it ankles? Or is it both? Does any of it start from her back? Does she get any seat of the bum pain or any shooting pain down the legs? That would point more towards a spinal problem. But if we excluded that, either through examination or through an MRI, I would then start looking at the knees. Despite somebody being of, not overweight and active, you can still get osteoarthritis and wear and tear of the joints. So it might be through no fault of her own that she just has some wear and tear of those joints as well. If the anti-inflammatories aren't working, we would get up-to-date x-rays, plus or minus an MRI maybe, and then we could have a conversation about injection therapy, corticosteroids, hyaluronic acid injections as well might be a benefit, but we take it on a patient-by-patient basis. But starting point, I've always been taught, start at the top and work your way down. So normally we'd start with spine, hip, then knee, then ankles. But of course, we would just have a chat and examination initially first.
Yeah, it sounds like there's plenty of options for her.
Absolutely,
anyway.
Yeah.
Now, this next person, unfortunately, we don't know whether they're male or female or how old they are, but this person says, I had a couple of falls in the past. My back feels heavy when I'm walking, and now I'm wondering, could it be a disc out of place?
It certainly could. Now, what we also find a lot of MRIs show is a thing called age-appropriate change. It's a very polite way of saying that as we get older, certain things will have some wear and tear on them. Anybody over the age of 35 will have some dehydration of their discs. One of my sayings is treat the man, not the scan, or treat the patient, not the picture. So you can have reports back from MRIs. You can have certain pictures on the screen that would look concerning, but you have to match those to the patient sitting in front of you, what he or she is complaining of. The back heaviness might be a weakness of some of the paraspinal muscles. And again, conditioning, training and load might be a big benefit to that. But certainly if they were seeing me in the clinic, the first thing we would do is examine them, get a history from them, and then possibly move on to get an MRI of their back as well. But again, just because it might come back with some disc change, it doesn't mean that they necessarily need anything done surgically. They might actually just benefit from very good going physiotherapy for mobilisation.
We'll just take, I think we have time for maybe two more. A caller broke her shoulder 4 years ago, had two operations on it since. It's very swollen and sore, and she also has very bad knees. She's wondering, what can she do? Now, unfortunately, she didn't leave an age here, Patter.
That's okay. That's okay. Joints quiet after we fix them or stabilize them. That can make them very stiff, and this can leave people with a loss of range of movement or a lot of pain afterwards. The first thing, again, very similarly, would be the approach of a history examination and then get some up-to-date imaging. But with that, then I would say physiotherapy might be some starting point for them. Injections might help if it's a rotator cuff problem. But then if we have had a fall and fracture in the past, we might have some osteoarthritis or degeneration going on, and they may need more intervention later on. But without knowing what the surgeries were previously, it'd be a little bit difficult to give anything more specific at the moment.
Text in from a listener who says, is there any cure for trigger ring finger in the right hand? So again, now you'll have to tell us what that is.
There are what we call pulleys in the hand that stop your tendons from subluxing. So for instance, if you're moving your fingers, and if anybody listening now is, let's say, moving their fist, you can see where the tendons would be moving the fingers, but they don't pop up like a violin bow. But sometimes the trigger of the tendon, or the tendon itself, gets caught under those pulleys. Injections with steroid can sometimes settle it down, but oftentimes you might need surgery on it just to release that pulley to give you some freedom of it as well. It's a relatively non-invasive treatment for them, but if you were seeing me in the clinic, we would first start with injections to see if we could settle the finger, splint it in the correct position for a little bit longer, and then see how we get on afterwards. But certainly it's something that could be looked at in the bonds if they wish to be seen.
Okay. What we'll just squeeze in one more. I think a 76-year-old caller had her rotary cuff damaged. Is that a keyhole operation or a full replacement? Is that your shoulder, rotator
cuff?
It
is, yeah. So the rotator cuff is the group name for all the tendons around your shoulder that let you move your shoulder. They can be done keyhole, and generally now they are done keyhole, and it's something that's been very well established in the bonds. My own father has had this done in the bonds previously and has had a very good response from this as well. With those, you don't necessarily divide it into either that or a replacement. It would depend on the position of the humeral head, how much arthritis you have in the shoulder, and that would decide then which would be more beneficial. So it depends on what the main problem is, if it's a weakness, if it's tendon pain, or if it's joint pain, and that would then help you make the decision with the patient as to what they should have.
Very good. Well, listen, a lot of people have been asking about getting in touch with you. I presume, is it a referral from a GP? Is that the...
That would be the mainstay of it, certainly. Now, we also accept referrals from physiotherapists as well, so there's no issue from that perspective. Sarah, my secretary, has kept the ship running the whole time with me, and I'd be lost without her. And but certainly you can contact us either at pamoxlinga or moxivna@bonsecur.ie, or also then your GP can refer in through HealthLink as well. And a lot of the physiotherapists will also have access to this as well, or direct referral through email. If needs be, you can also call the office to get some contact details as well.
Okay, so you have a clinic within the bonds?
I do. So I'm situated in Suite 4 in the Kerry Clinic, in the original clinic there. And Sarah, like I was saying, would be the point of contact if you do reach out to us. She mans my emails. I have access to them as well. So if stuff needs to be picked up a bit quicker between the two of us, we will catch everything that comes in.
Oh, brilliant. Well, listen, it's been really interesting hearing about the kind of work you do, and judging by the volume of questions, we'll have to bring you on again, I think, Padder.
That's all right, no problem.
You'll have to come back and talk to us again. Thank you so much for popping in for a chat. And I know it's still relatively early on in your bonds career, so the very best of luck in the future.
Thank you very much.
I have a feeling you're going to be very busy.
I hope so, and I'm very thankful.
Thank you so much, Padder Moxivna, orthopaedic surgeon. We're going to take a break, folks. We will.